welcome to the Aquariumax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 79, recorded September 12th, 2011.
Greetings, everyone.
Hello.
To start off, I would like to extend our thanks to Mike from I'm Not Sure Where, who sent us an email right after we released the podcast on Wednesday, or tried to release the podcast on Wednesday, indicating that there was a problem, and we were able to get it back up by the next day. I'm still not sure what exactly happened, but we were able to fix it by just redoing everything.
It ran off to Cyber La La Land.
Yeah, I basically just had to upload it again, but thank you, Mike, for doing that. Otherwise, we might not have found out. And
then where would we be?
Certainly not as soon, so...
We'd have a whole host of angry aquarists after us.
Or perhaps just confused aquarists. I'd like to think. Perhaps just confused.
What do we got first today? Andreka has found a good brand and good instructions for using peat moss from the store.
And this is cool, because she asked us about this last week, and we basically said no.
Don't do it.
And here are some reasons why. But this is the cool thing. Andreka found out a way to get around all those reasons and find ways to deal with them. I don't mean get around in a negative way. I just mean she was able to see the difficulties that we mentioned with using peat moss from the store and adjust them. And one thing I should clarify that I didn't clarify last week, I think I used the terms peat and peat moss interchangeably, and they're not really interchangeable exactly. Now, peat moss and peat, in a way, are the same thing, but there are certain important differences. Basically, peat is peat moss after it has died, and it's in a highly acidic environment, and so it goes through certain changes as it begins to decompose, but in this highly acidic environment, it doesn't decompose in the same way that a lot of things would, but it goes into smaller particles, and it has certain different properties, and so on. So, that's peat.
So, peat as in, like, peat bogs, people go cut peat and burn
right,
it in the
in
winter.
Ireland, and they dry it and cook it, yeah, use it to burn in the fires, yes. Okay. But it was originally peat moss, but after years and years of being compressed under other layers of living peat moss and dead peat moss, it eventually becomes peat. So there is a difference, but starts out with the same thing. So,
what was she asking us about last week? Whether she could use from the store the moss or just plain peat?
I believe I would have to go and look back. Let's see if I can go back and look at that. I think her actual question was that she wanted to know if she could use regular peat.
Yeah. So not peat moss, just peat.
Right, and then she clarified that this time she's using peat moss, which helps. And also she found a brand that doesn't have any gunk in it, any like mold retardants or fertilizers, which was one of the main issues with it before. So,
Did she tell us what that brand is?
Yes, and I think it's Schultz's, which they do a lot of garden stuff. And I will put that link that she sent on the instructions that she's been following, how to do it, on the
resources page,
yes. But basically, she puts it in a bag that's made from, I think she said it was made from filter floss, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be wrong. I'll have to check that out and make sure. But anyway, we'll put that on the resources page so you can all check that out. She said it's working to lower her pH. And as long as you can keep that, you know, consistent, keep your pH consistent is the most important thing, then, wow, that's awesome. So that's the way to do it.
Happy day.
Glad to hear that Andreka has found a good way to do that. And, yeah, we'll just look forward to hearing if she has any more things to say about that. And just use this opportunity maybe to bring this up, that sometimes I am too quick to say, no, that's not going to work. But I shouldn't really say that. I should say, well, here are some possible caveats about that particular item, but there's probably some way to do it, because in aquarium keeping there are a lot of possibilities and a lot of caveats and a lot of, wow, this shouldn't have worked but it did. There are a lot of things like that, so I should not be too quick just to dismiss something just because there are several difficulties inherent in doing it, because you can often get past those. So there you go. So thank you for bringing that up, Andreka. I appreciate that.
Okay, we are going to go now to Paul, who's in Durham in the UK.
And he has contributed before. All right. He has had heard all this talk about cherry shrimp, because we've had a lot of discussions about cherry shrimp in recent shows, and he's mentioned that this has perked his interest in the little critters. But he has a reservation.
And at a restaurant?
No, not that sort of reservation.
Oh.
He's wondering that if he adds some to his tank, he's wondering when he does gravel vacuuming, mm-hmm. if that will harm them, and if they're easy to avoid while you're doing gravel vacuuming, and if they burrow into the gravel, which he hears they do, and I can see with a burrowing creature in the gravel, a gravel vac could potentially cause some damage. So he's wondering about that. So what do you have to say to him about that?
Me? Yes. I vacuum the floor. You vacuum the tank.
Well, I vacuum the floor, too.
You vacuum the floor, too. I shouldn't say that. That was a terrible comment. You vacuum the floor just as much as I do. And for the record, Russ does the dishes just as much as I do.
Well,
but that
you.
Has nothing to do with cherry shrimp,
not
either
so
way.
Much. Not so much, but that's okay. Well, I would say, Paul, to you that it shouldn't be a problem at all. First of all, because we've been keeping cherry shrimp for about 6 or 7 years, I think. And not once have I seen an injury that was attributable to a gravel vac. I think, and definitely no dent in the population. They do just fine. So you may feel reassured on that point. Now, when they're on the surface of the substrate, they tend to just flee the gravel vac. They, you know, they do their little flip their tail backwards and zip off.
Run for the hills!
If they're quite startled, and if they're not particularly startled, then they just sort of trundle off.
Trundle for the hills!
Yeah, in a more relaxed way. So, that hasn't been an issue. So, I hope that's good news. We can help you not worry about that particular issue so that you can go ahead and get some cherry shrimp. The burrowing thing, now this is interesting. I hadn't heard that they burrowed. I haven't actually observed them burrowing either.
Flowers don't burrow, do they?
Not that I've noticed. No, they dig around. They reach their claws down into the gaps in the gravel. And in fact, the wee baby ones, the ones that are really small, they are so small that they can mill around in the interstices between the gravel. I love that word, interstices.
The what?
The interstices.
Interstices?
Yeah. Interstices.
Interstices.
It's a voiced final S.
Interstices.
So it sounds like a Z, a Z. Yes.
Tell us what that means.
Just the little gaps in the gravel. It sounds cool.
Just a really, really fancy way. Yeah. A word that would not fit into the little gaps.
Right.
Means
exactly.
Little gaps.
Exactly. See, there you go. The little ones are so tiny they can fit there. But the adults, I've never seen them burrow in the gravel. Of course, if any of you have, then please, you know, write in or send us a
how long have you
message
had,
or something.
How long have we had cherry
About
shrimp?
6 or 7 years.
And we've never seen them burrowing.
Never seen them burrowing. But that doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I've never seen it happen. And besides the fact that the babies can get down in there, like I was saying, you might accidentally vacuum up a few of those, I have to admit. In fact, the very first baby cherry shrimp that we ever found, Kelly found it.
I did?
I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember.
Okay, this was in Hawaii, and it was in my office tank, and we lived really close to my office. So on the weekends, we'd usually take
a walk over there.
To my office, because we lived like 5 minutes
We lived
walk.
On campus at BYU Hawaii, so...
Yeah. If we wanted to go there, you know, to take care of the fish, and I'd do the water changes on the weekends, we'd all go on a lovely walk, which is a lovely thing to do in Hawaii. And sometime during that walk, we'd stop by and do a water change. And I had just drained a couple of gallons of water into the bucket from it was a 10-gallon tank at the time. We later upgraded, but yeah. And Kelly looked into the bucket and said, "There's something in here. There's a shrimp in here." And I said, "Oh, it's probably just an amphipod," because there were some amphipods in the gravel. And so I looked in there and saw an amphipod. I said, "There it is." And she said, "No, over here. Look there." And it was a shrimp. It was a baby cherry shrimp that was even smaller than the amphipod. And so we rescued the little guy and put him back in the tank. And everything was fine. And pretty soon we were just up to our eyeballs in shrimp shortly thereafter. And the descendants of those shrimp are among us still today.
There you go.
So there you go.
So it's a good thing I spotted it.
Exactly. That was...
The whole
the grandmother
dynasty
of all...
Dynasty of little cherry shrimp would have been lost.
Exactly. So you may have to just be careful not to get babies. But other than that, you should be okay. I mean, once in a while, the adults will try to go up the gravel vac. So if you're using, like, not a python, but a gravel vac...
They must
gravel
think they're salmon.
Yeah, it's trying to swim upstream or something.
They're a little confused.
I guess they're swimming downstream, but...
That's okay.
But you can just, you know, plug up the thing and let them go, and they'll be fine. They're pretty hardy.
Excuse me.
Or let them go into the bucket and then net them out. And when I use a python, which is what I almost always do, I just flip the switch and then let the water go, and they fall back into the tank, and they're fine. So, yeah, go ahead and get yourself some if you'd like. I don't think it'll be a problem at all.
Who is it that...
Paul.
Has, no. Who had the cherry shrimp that they gave to the zoo? Was that Mick?
Oh, that was Mick.
They're both from the UK,
but I don't know how close Carnforth and Durham.
I was just thinking, how
close.
Cool would it be if, as Aquarimax, we brought these two aquarists together and they could get some, you know, Paul could get cherry shrimp from Mick. And
maybe they could do it by post.
I don't know exactly where Durham is in relation to Carnforth.
I don't know either. We should have to look that up.
But you two should hook up for some shrimp.
Maybe. But maybe by post would be practical.
There you go.
I don't know how sending shrimp in the post is practical in the UK.
I don't know
how that works. But that could be a possible idea. Anyway, there you go. So thanks. Thanks, Paul, and hopefully that helps.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, and speaking of Mick, that's who we're hearing from next.
Yes, indeed. We're going to hear from Mick. Well, Mick... has just been catching up on the last couple of shows because they were on vacation at the East Coast, and there were some cool aquarium-related things they did out there.
That sounds neat.
So he did say, I assume that I'm going to quote this. Quote, I assume Kelly was right about the garlic, as although we had a day in Whitby, the home of Castle Dracula, I have had no vampiric activity in the fish room. Unquote.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Yes. So Kelly's tongue-in-cheek comment was taken to heart. There you go.
That's good.
Because if, in case you missed the last show, we talked about him using garlic for his fish as a food additive, and Kelly mentioned that that would probably protect his fish from vampires. So there you go.
Well, you know, I mean, you don't want your fish to get sucked dry, so...
No.
That would be tragic.
And he said, while they were away, they visited an aquarium center in Hull, which is in Humberside, I hope I'm saying that right, UK. The aquarium is called The Deep.
That's a cool name for an aquarium.
A good name for an aquarium. And he said it's a huge aquarium and is very interactive for all ages. So if any of you are around that area near Humberside, UK...
See, that's another great reason for us to go on vacation over there.
I know. That's another among many.
I know. We need to keep a list of all these places we should go.
And he said their 10-month-old daughter loved the jellyfish tanks.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty young, but you start them young. That's how it works, mm-hmm. You know? And the tropical lagoon, they had around 1,000 fish of 55 different species.
Wow.
So that sounds like a nice place. And one of the really interesting attractions, I've never seen anything like this. I've never even heard of anything like this. There was a virtual rock pool, which was projected onto the floor and responded to footsteps to activate splashes. And the virtual fish swam away when you stepped near them. That was a quote, that last bit.
That's pretty funny. So you could pretend that you were walking through the shoals of the sea.
Yeah, that must have been something.
But you didn't have to get wet.
Exactly. I like the
and
idea
have
of
salty toes afterwards.
Right. And he has provided a link to The Deep. So we will put that on the resources page and you can check that out.
And if any of you go on vacation...
In that particular area.
You know where to go now.
Yeah, sounds fun. Okay, he also had some comments about the cherry shrimp acclimatizing, about Juliet shrimp in Paris.
Okay, and if Paul's going to get some, this might be helpful for him too.
Yeah. He said he heard the discussion about that, about the cherry shrimp acclimatizing to Parisian water, and he says he keeps his at pH 6.8 and would not consider going above 7.4. Now... now I'm wondering, I'm not certain if he's talking about cherry shrimp or crystal reds right now.
She was doing both. Uh-oh, we're about to get attacked by the break. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Because I think it was Juliet, getting back to the shrimp, and whether they're crystal reds or cherry red, red cherry shrimp, he was saying that he keeps his at 6.8 and would not consider going above 7.4, which I think that we were talking about the crystal reds last time. So maybe, Mick, you could clarify which one you meant. I was actually going to email you about that and ask, but I'm not sure. So, because I know that red cherry shrimp can be kept at higher pHs than 7.4. I've kept them successfully at 8.0 and so on. So,
I think he's talking about crystal reds,
but you could clarify if you have a chance, and that would be great. Now, he said he got a batch of crystal blacks a couple of months ago.
Ooh.
And I believe I've also heard
those. Are they really black? I don't think I've seen those.
They are. They're black and white.
Have I seen those? You tell me if I've seen those. I forget sometimes.
I'm trying to remember. You may have. I know we've seen crystal reds around.
Okay.
And I've showed them to you. But I don't know if I've seen crystal blacks around. If you have, I think I have. But crystal blacks are basically the same as crystal reds, so they have the black rings around their body and the white rings around their body, sort of. They're the same species as crystal reds, but they're a different color variety, and I think they preceded crystal reds in their existence, if I recall. And he said, despite being careful about setting them up, he lost 5 of the 7 that he bought.
Oh, bummer.
And he had the reverse effect, as the online store that he purchased them from had high TDS and pH.
Hmm.
So, do you know what a TDS is?
No, actually, I was just thinking of asking you.
Actually,
what is a TDS?
It's not a count noun. I shouldn't have said. I shouldn't have put that article in there. Actually, TDS stands for total dissolved solids. So it's a way of measuring the mineral content of the water.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. They were high, meaning there were a lot of dissolved minerals in the water.
Right, and he was bringing them down to 6.8, which is a lower pH. And probably had a lower mineral, lower TDS, lower total mineral solids.
Him.
And that probably contributed to shocking them. And he is sharing his proposed method of trying to acclimatize some crystal blacks again, and that may be of use to Juliet. It's kind of a more specific and detailed version of what we were talking about earlier. So I like what he says here, so we'll recount that. He says, he's going to empty the bag into a 1-gallon container, add a clump of Java moss or Nitella, which are good, you know, nutrient sponges. Add an airline with an old airstone for filtration. So you get the old airstone, and it's going to have some bacterial growth on it, and not quite as many bubbles as the new airstone. So the bubbles will be gentle, but the bacteria on it will help colonize that little mini tank of temporary, you know, holding tank. And then he's going to add a turkey baster full, which holds about 1.5 ounces, I think. Water, something like that. A turkey baster full of his tank water every day for a week.
So they get kind of mixed together until they're about on the same level.
Very slowly, yes. And then he's going to test the pH and the total dissolved solids, the TDS, of the container and hopefully transfer the shrimp to their own tank. So I think that sounds like a very sound plan for doing it.
Sounds like a good way to go.
I hope that works. And he also includes some good links here. One for specifically for acclimating new shrimp at planetinverts.com, but we'll include the entire link on the resources page. And then he also found a good shrimp grade guide for grading crystal red shrimp.
Like grade A, grade B?
They do have different letter designations.
This is a really good one. This one is sort of okay. This one's not so good.
And they have double letters and different things based on the quality of the shrimp and how expensive they'll
be. People show shrimp?
I don't know exactly.
Shrimp shows?
I do know that in Asia, at least, and in other places, you can get crystal red shrimp. They're the most expensive shrimp that I'm aware of, because they have very specific patterns that they're breeding for. Like the ones I think I told you about. They have one that's all white, with a little red head, little red spot on the top of its head.
Just like the koi and the cranes.
Right, the koi and the cranes and the goldfish, the tancho.
Tancho, that's the
That
word
means
for it, yeah.
Crane in Japanese, but it's applied to, you know, fish that are used to emulate that, and they're considered very sought after. All of those creatures that have those patterns are considered important in Japan. They emulate the flag of Japan. They, you know, it's all connected. Emulate them, but So they're considered good symbols for Japan and so on. So they're very expensive there if you get that kind. For example, I don't remember what particular name of that particular type of shrimp is called, but I believe it's on this because I think I've read this before. But we'll put this on the resources page too. And Mick also said that he has taken a few pictures of his crystal reds, which he's attached, so we'll put those on the resources page, and also a 30-second video of a buried female. You know, when carrying
B-E-R-R-I-E-D, as we've had lengthy, bizarre discussions about.
Right, and a tiny shrimp. And, Mick, if you wouldn't mind sending that link to the video one more time, because I've been having some trouble with that one. So if you could send it one more time, I'll see if I can get that to work this time. I think it may be an incompatibility with my iPad or something, but we'll see what we can do. But I would love to put those all up on the resources page, podcast resources page, so everybody can take a look at those. And thanks for sending those along, Mick.
And may your fish room continue to be free of bloodsuckers.
Yes, I think that's words to live by for all aquarists. Now, we do have one last comment. This is kind of fun. We put a video up of our African dwarf frogs, our albino ones, some time ago. Mm-hmm. And I still have kind of suspect that
now,
one of them might be hypomelanistic, but I'm not sure. Yes.
You took them into your office at work.
Right. I took them into my office at work where they're thriving.
There's like a little froggy shrine in there.
Froggy figurines and whatnot.
Froggy stuffed animals.
And under them, I've got the
real frogs.
The real frogs, which is fun. But we had someone respond to that video. We've had a couple of people respond to it. One of them, I think we mentioned, included the tadpoles that she was raising of these albino morph. But someone else has responded and said that they have a pitch black African dwarf frog. And we looked at the video, and indeed, it is a very dark African dwarf frog, which doesn't appear to have any pattern at all. It just seems to be black. So maybe it is indeed a melanistic version of the African dwarf frog, which is pretty exciting.
It was a little hard to tell in the video. It would have been more helpful if there was a normal colored one next to it so you could see the difference.
That might be useful.
But even then, it still looked pretty dark and you couldn't really see a pattern on it.
So it's kind of exciting. You know, you never know what you'll get. But it's fun to see all the different types. You know, I've seen a photo of a bright blue bullfrog.
Really?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be kind of fun to have bright blue African dwarf frogs?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I think that might just be a little weird.
I don't know. The thing about blue bullfrogs is that green in bullfrogs is actually yellow and blue. And so if you have a gene that kicks out the yellow, so there isn't any yellow anymore, you see the blue, kind of like in budgies.
Oh.
That's how blue budgies came about, too.
Oh, very bizarre. So they just found one that had that mutation and started breeding it?
Oh, I don't know if they have an established morph, but there was an individual at least that was blue. But I digress.
I would like
slightly
to see that. That's all right.
That's interesting.
You digress all you want.
Okay.
You know.
I'll take that to
heart. It's the age of freedom. You can digress, right?
I guess so. Well, we'd like to say to all of our friends, may the fish be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.